Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
There was this initial reporting from league insiders that had sources telling them that nothing was wrong, that New England was simply making a documentary, that they were allowed to be there, and that they had not actually filmed anything inappropriate. Those were the initial reports, that they were not filming from the press box, they were filming in the press box. There is a difference, that there was a feature on a scout for a series called Do Your Job. So when that went down, it seemed like people were rushing in, rushing to judgment, making a mountain out of a molehill. I mean, come on, the Patriots. It's the Patriots. They're being unfairly criticized. They simply want to make a documentary. Man, get off their backs. They're more about Ken Burns than they are Vince Lombardi these days. And then came the reports that it was a little more than just shooting some video of an interview in a press box, that there may have been more to it than that. And that's when the Patriots came out with a statement that while they got credentials from the Browns to be in the press box, they did not tell the Bengals. And that was, quote, an unintended oversight, end quote. Now we're getting somewhere. And, quote, in addition to filming the scout, the production crew, without specific knowledge of league rules, inappropriately filmed the field from the press box. The sole purpose of the filming was to provide an illustration of an advanced scout at work on the road. There was no intention of using the footage for any other purpose. We understand and acknowledge that our video crew, which included independent contractors who shot the video, unknowingly violated a league policy by filming the field and sideline from the press box. End quote. So what that means is, in a matter of hours, on Monday, it went from, hey, this is nothing at all, to, yeah, you know, we screwed up. We broke the rules, but not intentionally. We didn't mean to. You know we would never do that. We're not about that. We would never do something like that. Not intentionally. You know, maybe they would. Maybe they wouldn't. Maybe they already have. Maybe they haven't. But the fact that the Patriots came right out and admitted to doing it in a matter of hours, when they never come right out and admit to or say anything at all, tells you that that video is not what the alleged league sources claimed it was initially. It's worse. The question is, how much worse? And that's what others around the league and pretty much everybody listening right now wants to know, exactly what's on that video. Still, while the Pats admit that a rule was broken, they also want you to know we didn't break it. It's not us. It was some subcontractor that didn't know the rules. It's not us. It's not the Patriots. Yeah, like, never mind that the Patriots hired that crew. Never mind that they were working there on behalf of the Patriots. They're like, it wasn't us. Oh, it wasn't you. It was just people who were working on your behalf. Oh, that's cool. Why didn't you just say so? No problem. Have a great day. Yeah, nice try with that. Good luck with that. And by the way, is there anything more absurd than the Patriots making a documentary series called Do Your Job and then claiming that the people helping you cheat, shoot that series, don't know how to do their jobs? That's great. The only thing more hilarious than the Patriots getting all caught up in something like this, again, is that it revolves around a documentary called Do Your Job, when nobody in question seems to know how to do their job. And then comes this report from Paul Denner Jr. Quote, according to sources who have viewed the tape, it shows about 8 minutes of footage focusing on recording the Bengals sideline. It's a direct view of the sideline as players run on and off the field and coaches make signals for plays. End of quote. All right, so now would be a very good time to go back a bit to the reporting of Don Van Natta Jr. and Seth Wickersham. Remember back in 2015, in a piece titled Spygate to Deflategate, Inside What Split the NFL and the Patriots Apart, they wrote, quote, during games, Matt Walsh later told investigators the Patriots videographers were told to look like media members, to tape over their team logos or turn their sweatshirt inside out to wear credentials that said Patriots TV or Kraft Productions. The videographers also were provided with excuses for what to tell NFL security if asked what they were doing. Tell them you're filming the quarterbacks or the kickers or footage for a team show. End quote. Tell them you're shooting footage for a team show. Now, does that sound familiar? It just so happens to be that the person who got caught in the press box was doing nearly the exact same thing that had happened during the Spygate era. I mean, what a coinkydink. And the weirdest thing about this is not that it allegedly happened. It's that there have been reports that people may actually buy what the Patriots are selling. May buy the explanation and just keep right on moving. And what's the rationale for that? The rationale is there's no way they could get caught doing the same thing again. There's no way they'd be that stupid. There's no way that happened. It must be a misunderstanding. There's no way Bill Belichick or his staff would sign off on something that stupid. Are you kidding me with that? They appear to be caught doing the exact same thing that you busted them for in the past, but your reaction is, oh no, they would never do that again. No way would they do that again. Let me ask you this. If a bank robber was caught in broad daylight, convicted, went to prison, came out, and got caught in broad daylight once again, robbing a bank, nobody would ever say, that couldn't happen. Nobody would be that stupid. He wouldn't do that again. No, you know what you'd say? You'd say, he's a bank robber. He's doing what he does. He got caught once, and he got caught again. So if the Patriots were caught and punished before, then if they're caught again doing something very similar, maybe you might want to look into it. Maybe you might not just want to sweep that under the rug. Maybe you don't just buy that weird-ass explanation about a documentary series and them somehow accidentally or non-intentionally breaking the rules. Because there's this also. Accidentally or unintentionally breaking the rules is not an excuse. Breaking the rules is breaking the rules, especially when you've already been busted for breaking that rule. Like, at this point, there's no excuse for not knowing these rules. And there's definitely no excuse for the Patriots and the Patriots' independent contractors not knowing these rules. If you work for or with the Patriots and you're holding a video cam in your hand, you have to know every single rule. You know what? You have to, quote, do your job. Yeah, I know. I know they could have had somebody in the stands using an iPhone 11 and probably gotten better footage. But just because they could have cheated in a different way does not mean that they didn't break the rules this way. I mean, they did admit they broke the rules. Now, I'm not saying that Bill Belichick ordered this or signed off on this or knew about this. I actually don't even know what the Patriots did. So I'm not going to rush to judgment. But I'm sure as hell not going to give them a free pass on it. And I'm not going to buy their hasty statement on it that it was a complete reversal of what league sources had been reporting earlier. And to the question, why would the Patriots risk their reputation and do something this stupid? And why would they do it against the 1-12 Bengals? I really don't know. Let me ask you this. Why did they videotape the 4-12 Jets? Why did they deflate footballs, allegedly? I don't know. Maybe it's not a coincidence. Maybe it is an innocent mistake. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not an accident. Because remember this, Spygate was not only about the 4-12 Jets. It was also about the Packers. And investigators found 8 tapes of game footage with notes going back over a number of years. And to the question of, why would you do it against one of the worst teams ever? In this case, the Bengals? I don't know, but I do know this. They've got a first-year head coach who they have not seen before. Any signals that you can pick up and get, and any edge that you can pick up would be pretty helpful. Maybe not this year, but for the future. And as for the question of why would they be so dumb and so brazen as to get caught again, I don't know. But for all we know, this is not the first time that they've done this since Spygate. It might be the first time they've been caught. People around the league and in the league office have got to be like, these guys again? And isn't that a fair question? Why is it always the Patriots who are in the middle of these things? I mean, do they have the worst luck ever? Or is this part of the Patriot way? Part of them doing their job, quote unquote, part of their DNA, part of their culture? Or is it just the worst luck ever? You tell me. Maybe it's all coincidence. Maybe it really is the craziest thing ever. And even though this is very similar to what they've done in the past, maybe this really was all about making a documentary. Maybe the Pats just happened to have a completely innocent, independent contractor who was filming a documentary on an advanced scout. And it just so happened they bumped the camera. Somebody did. And it got trained on the Bengals sideline for 8 minutes. Maybe they're that unlucky. But I'm telling you, if I see a serial bank robber in a vault holding sacks of money, I'm going to want more than just him saying, this isn't what it looks like, before I let him go. And I'm really not going to accept the I have never knowingly robbed a bank before excuse. Freaking Patriots, if true, and I'm not saying it is, I'm saying if true, same as they always are, and if true, it's time for Raj to do his job. Are you buying this or not? So are you clones worried about finding the perfect gift for the holiday season? I've got it for you, Peloton. Peloton is the gift that they're guaranteed to love this holiday season. Give your loved ones what they really want. Give them the gift of Peloton. I own a Peloton. I bought my Peloton long before we partnered up on this podcast, and I love it for a lot of different reasons. It's convenient. It's right there in the house. I never miss a workout. I love the variety of classes, the different instructors, the way that you can compete. There's a leaderboard. There's a community. I love all that. And now more than ever is a reason why you want to get in, because there is the gift of a worry-free trial. That's right. With Peloton's new 30-day home trial, you can try the bike worry-free for 30 days. If you decide that it's not for you, you can return that bike for a full refund. Peloton will even come pick it up at no cost. Except I don't think that's going to be the case. Not when you consider how convenient that bike is. Not when you consider how many different classes there are, both live and on demand. Not when you consider you get to work with world-class instructors. This holiday, give the gift of Peloton. And for a limited time only, get $100 off accessories. When you purchase the Peloton bike, just go to onepeloton.com. Use the promo code ROME. That's key. Onepeloton.com. Use the promo code ROME at checkout. I absolutely love my Peloton. I have for years, and I know you will too. Jay Wright is my guest. Jay, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How are you, buddy?
Good, Jay. How are you?
Great, man.
It's great talking to you. So, Jay, let me ask you first. You beat St. Joseph's on Saturday, and what that did was complete a run of three Big Five opponents in only 6 days. So what was that stretch like for your players, and how happy were you with the way they dealt with it?
You know, that's a wild stretch. You know, Philadelphia is the only city in the country where all the teams play each other. And the reason is it's just so difficult in scheduling, you know, with everybody going to 20 conference games now, it's so hard to put these games together. So, you know, when you did it in the off season and you saw three Big Five games, the Philly schools going at each other within 6 days, it didn't look so bad. But then when you had to go through it, it was tough. And we got a young team you know, we didn't look pretty in probably any of the three games, but to gut it out and get that through, we got a week of practice now before Delaware. I was really pleased with how we handled it. In Philly, when we play the Philly schools, they are always at another level for us, and we get that. We respect that. So for these young guys, some of them playing in their first Big Five games, it was really a good week for us.
Jay Wright joining us. You do have a young team, Jay. I'm going to ask you about the kids in just 1 minute. But you and I have talked in the past about Big Five basketball and how special it is that it's a brotherhood. But what's it like when two of the coaches in a three-game run are former assistants? I mean, can you still enjoy those games the way you would, or is it tough to go up against and beat a friend and a colleague?
No, man, you're absolutely right, Jim. I hate it. Like it. The Big Five in itself, is such a unique entity, and there's such great history in the city of Philadelphia. And everybody in Philly, you know, this is a big game to the to all of us. And, you know, in the summers we're all together and everybody goes down to the Jersey Shore together and everybody talks about the games during the season. You could win a national championship, but they're talking about, you know, the LaSalle-Villanova game down the shore. So the games are really tense and highly volatile. But then you add, you have two former assistants, Ashley Howard at LaSalle, Billy Lang at St. Joe's. I particularly don't like going against assistants. I want those guys to be successful. I want them to win, but we don't want to lose to them. So when those games are over, it's kind of a relief.
No, I get that. Jay Wright joining us. And then, Jay, how different does the Big Five feel now without Phil Martelli and Fran Dunphy?
A lot, Jim. Those guys are legends here in Philadelphia forever. And one of the things we do together here, and we add Drexel to the Philadelphia Big Five to make it six, is our Coaches versus Cancer. And Phil and Fran, they built that here, you know, over 20 years. And we raise over $1 million a year for cancer research. And those guys started it. And those guys grew up in the Big Five. They were assistants in the Big Five. Fran played in the Big Five. Fran coached at LaSalle and Penn. Phil's a lifer at St. Joe's. They're bigger than life. So it does seem strange, but as we all know, I won't be at Villanova one day, but this thing will continue. This great Big Five tradition will continue. It's bigger than any of us.
Villanova head coach Jay Wright joining us once again. You know, Jay, if you were to look back at last year, you had Eric Paschal and Phil Booth, and you had some youth as well. You made the decision to play the vets quite a bit, and you told Dana O'Neill, quote, "We didn't have the mindset, let's throw the young guys in there and take our hits because we felt like those other two, we owed it to them," end quote. Seems to me that a lot of programs would put the young guys out there to build for this year instead of leaning on Paschal and Booth. So why did you feel like you owed it to the vets to do that?
Yeah, Jim, that's exactly what we're paying for a little bit right now, is that we didn't get our young guys, you know, from last year, our freshmen and sophomores. We didn't not just get them enough time, but we didn't make them go-to guys, and we didn't run enough stuff for them. And now they're, you know, the only guy that we have this year that was ever, you know, a consistent starter was Colin Gillespie. The rest of the guys really have never been in that position. But Phil, you know, in our program, being a junior and senior in our program is really well respected. You know, in some programs, if you get to your junior or senior year and you're still in college, you're kind of a failure. But in our program, our guys, you know, they want to graduate, they want to grow, they want to develop as men and players. So when you get to be a junior and senior, you're really given a lot of responsibility, and you're really respected. So Phil and Eric had both been a part of two national championships. They had given so much to the program, and they were great leaders. We just felt like we had to do everything we could to make that year the best it could for them and play through them. And they did a great job and carried us to a Big East regular season championship and a Big East tournament championship. But we're kind of seeing the results of that now with, you know, not a lot of experience, but that's okay. We'll get that experience. We're going to take some hits this year, but it was worth it, and we would do it again, and we will do it again.
Talking to Jay Wright, I appreciate that response, Jay. You know, I'm really fascinated by this notion of developing players. I mean, as you've said, there are a lot of people that want to skip developing college, and they just want to show up and say, this is who I am, let me do my thing, get out of the way. It seems to me that being developed and being coached does not always sound like a lot of fun. So how do you go about identifying those players who do want that, who crave that?
That's the essence of our recruiting, is trying to find those guys, and we try to talk to them about that, because what's happened in basketball now, and it's no one's fault, is the NBA, and now the G League is going to start doing it, they are willing to take guys and develop them. And they're good at it. You know, they don't have to go to class. You know, they can just go there and they can work on basketball all day. You can, you know, look here in Philadelphia, you know, you can look at Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Like, Ben Simmons didn't win in college, you know. He didn't even get to the NCAA tournament. But the Sixers took him first pick, and they've spent time with him and developed him. And now, you know, these guys are, you know, all-stars, and hopefully, I'm a Sixers fan, hopefully lead them to an NBA championship. But So they're willing to do it in the NBA. So the kids know it. You know, they look at it and say, okay, I could go to college, have to go to class, you know, have to be a part of something bigger than myself, or I could just go to the NBA and they'll develop me there. I could even go to the G League and they'll develop me. So we talked to them about, like, do you want to be in college? Like, do you want to be a part of a student body? Do you want to grow as a person, grow as a student, and grow as a player? This is what we do. If you want it, we love you. If you don't, we respect your decision, and you can still do it another way.
Right. It may not be for everybody. Jay Wright joining us. So, Jay, of course, you came into the season off that 45-day stretch with USA Basketball. Now, you claim to be, quote, the scrub coach on that staff, Jay, which could never be true.
But it's true, though, Jim. Look at that staff.
Come on,
true.
Jay. Could never be true. But what was your takeaway from the experience? What was that like? And it's not true.
Jim, I tell you, it was so funny. Like, wherever we would go, you know, we went to Australia, we went to China, and, you know, they love the NBA in Australia and in China. And every time we would, it was before the Daryl Morey situation. So, like, every time we pull up to a hotel, you know, there'd be like hundreds and hundreds, thousands of people outside behind barricades just waiting to see the NBA guys. And everybody would get off the bus and they'd yell for Steve Kerr and Pop and Lloyd Pierce, and they knew, you know, they had different, and I could walk right through. Nobody knew who I was. It was perfect. I really enjoyed it. It was awesome. Like, I just walked right through. Nobody asked me for autographs. I could go right up to my room. All those other guys had to stay and take pictures and do autographs. But it was an incredible experience with Pop and Steve Kerr and Lloyd Pierce, and Jeff Van Gundy was a part of that staff. And we used to spend hours and hours at dinner and in the film room watching film and talking basketball. One of the true great basketball experiences of my life.
It sounds amazing, actually. Before you go, Jay, Kyle Lowry won an NBA title with the Raptors this summer. I'm curious, what kind of emotions did you feel as you saw that happen? And how far has he come as a player and a person since he first arrived on campus?
Jim, it was a real it was really emotional for me, my wife, and really, I mean, my kids are, you know, in their 20s now, and they watched Kyle when he came in here, and he was a rough character from North Philly, man. And North Philly's one of the toughest parts of Philadelphia, and he was the essence of North Philly, just defiant, a fighter, a competitor, but he had a great heart, and you knew it. And I remember when he came here, I went to the dean of students. I said, this guy won't drink, he won't do drugs, he won't do anything bad, but he could fight somebody. I said, I'm just telling you ahead, just, he's a good guy. He'll take responsibility for whatever he does. But he came in here and he learned the culture of Villanova basketball. He respected the Villanova community. He really grew as a man. And Jim, if you see him on the court after a championship with his kids, he's married to his high school sweetheart. He's a great father, great husband. And I'm so proud of him, and it still brings up emotion thinking about that right now, talking to you.
Jay Wright joining us. And Jay, really quickly, and I appreciate that too. I got about a minute. Kyle Lowry wrote a piece for the Players Tribune last year about his time at Villanova. And when he got to you, he said, quote, even though he had grown up in Bucks County, he had the perfect Philadelphia attitude. He did not give a bleep about what anybody in the city thought about him, end quote. Does that sound about right to you? Are you only concerned about what the people who matter think as opposed to everybody else?
Something you learn early in coaching, you know, you can't please anybody. You gotta take care of your family, you gotta take care of your players, your coaches, and you gotta be true to your university and do the best you can, you know, and you're gonna take some hits with that from other people. So, you know, as long as your family, your guys and your university is taken care of, and that's the foremost of your decisions.
He is the head basketball coach at Villanova, has led them to a pair of national championships. They are 7-2. They're a very young team. They're number 20 in both polls. They're at home against Delaware. Jay, that's exactly why I look forward to that conversation every time we have it. So appreciate you, Jay. Thank you very much. That was great.
You too, buddy. Great talking to you, Jim.
Do you need auto parts, but you cannot get to a store right now? No problem. Head on over to O'ReillyAuto.com. Order parts for convenient pickup in store. O'Reilly Auto Parts has thousands of quality parts and accessories in stock. You can shop from your phone, your tablet, your computer, and then just pick them up on your schedule. With more than 5,000 stores nationwide, there is an O'Reilly Auto Parts store near you with friendly professional parts people who can have your order ready and waiting. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. When Steven Strasburg re-upped with the Nats for 7 years and a reported $245 million, a deal that would break the record for biggest pitcher contract by total and by yearly average, the reaction was twofold. One, good for him. Two, great for Gerrit Cole. Because everybody knew that record was not going to last very long. Because as good as Strasburg is, and as much as he earned that contract, especially with how he pitched in the World Series run, Cole is 2 years younger, which means that he was going to get 2 years more. And he had a number of teams desperate to get him. The Angels were jonesing hard for him to come back to the OC. He's an OC pitcher, and they want to bring him back. The Dodgers were willing to completely change their methods to get him. And then, of course, the Yankees wanted him too and have been setting it up for a long time. And then there was everybody's favorite team, the mystery team. And the mystery team apparently was the Astros. So if you're on the open market with major markets bidding, if you're on the open market and you've got a couple of teams from SoCal and your previous employer and the evil empire, you know things are going well. At that point, that guy's laughing. So the question was not, is he going to break Strasburg's record, but by how much? How many more years? How many more millions? So Cole to the Yankees for 9 years, $324 million. That's how much. It's a hell of a lot. That's a lot more money. That's how much more, which is awesome. It's great. Now, that's not to say I'm a Yankee fan when I say that. I'm not a Yankee fan. I'm not a fan of anybody. Again, I don't care who wins. I don't care who loses. What I do care about is that some teams actually do care if they win or they lose. You see, what's great about that contract is it says there are at least a few teams in Major League Baseball who are actually trying to win, will actually pay the price to win. There's still a couple of teams willing to throw down serious cash in order to get a ring. There are still a couple of teams that do measure their success on rings and not on wins per dollar spent. Still a couple of teams who remember that people are rooting for teams and not spreadsheets. There are still a couple of teams who want to win instead of keeping their costs down, keeping good prospects in the minors so they can manipulate service time, and rolling the dice on a bunch of arbitration guys to see if they can get hot. You see, baseball is good when the Yankees are good. And the Yankees should be damn good next year. And yes, I do know that Didi Gregorius went to the Phillies. But he was only with them for half of last year. You see, the bigger note here is they won 103 games last season. And they did so in a season where Luis Severino threw 12 innings total. They won 103 games without their ace. And now they're getting him back and another ace. And not just another ace, the ace. The best pitcher in baseball. The bigger the stage, the better this guy is. That kind of an ace. Man, that's brass. That's great. And they have to be the immediate favorite for the 2020 World Series. You know how I know they are? Because the flight deck was already blowing me up about futures bets involving the Yankees. That's how I know. Remember, it was the flight deck who got fat when he got down on the Nats before the season last year. Follow the money. Follow that gigantic head.
Slider, you stink.
I can't wait for the Macy's Day Parade. I turn on the TV. There's Charlie Brown. There's Linus. There's Lucy's head blowing in the wind. There's the flight deck's big dome bobbing up and down. Love that parade. Anyway, let's go ballistic. Follow the money. And when I say follow the money, I'm saying follow that gigantic head. I knew it when he blew me up this morning going, dude, you know they're plus 400. I'm like, I usually don't have the patience. I'm not in it for that long con, that long play. But I got to follow the money. I might hit that. Anyway, the Yankees get their guy. And not only did they get their guy, this is a guy they've wanted for a long time. They wanted him since they drafted him back in 08. And the guy they tried to trade for when he was in Pittsburgh. They've been on this guy for a long, long time. And not only did they get him, in so doing, they kept him away from a couple of AL rivals in the Astros and Angels. Especially important that they kept him away from the Astros. You see, Gerrit Cole, as Brian Cashman called him, the white whale. That's a guy they had been chasing for years, and they finally got him. And you can see why they would. Man, this dude's a horse. This dude's a stud. He's a boss. He's a beast. Whatever you want to call him. There's so many different ways to measure that, but let me pick this one out for you. In fact, this stat I had to confirm. I saw this stat, and I thought to myself, misprint. There's no way that's true. 323 or 26 strikeouts, 326 in 212 and a third innings. 326 strikeouts in 212 and a third innings. I mean, not as great as when my guy, Old Hoss Radbourne, struck out 441 guys while pitching for the Providence Grays back in 84. You were there, Rit. You know. Hey-o! Damn, Rit, you look like Old Hoss Radbourne. I'm going to say that my man Old Hoss was probably pitching to a bunch of part-time baseball players and full-time butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers. Gerrit Cole is pitching full-time to professional hitters who have more access to data, intel, and every kind of analytic known to mankind. And these guys still do not have a chance against him. He had one loss after May 22nd. One. That's why you want that guy, because he delivers in the regular season, in the postseason. You think that's going to look any good in pinstripes? I'm guessing it will. Now, it's not going to guarantee the Yankees win a World Series, because you can't guarantee a World Series. You can't buy a World Series. And it's not on Cole to win them a World Series in order to earn that money. I want to make that clear, too. A lot of people hate hearing that. This guy's already earned that money. He's earned that money with what he's already done. And just so we're clear, the Yankees and their ownership group are doing just fine no matter what happens. Even if Cole turns into the second coming of Kevin Brown, the Yankees are still going to be just fine. Don't worry about the cost. Worry about the intent. And the Yankees' intent is to win, and to win it all. Because at a time where even major market teams like the Red Sox and the Cubs are reportedly looking to dump elite players to cut their costs, the Yankees are willing to spend big. The Yankees are willing to take that big swing because they set it up the right way. And they can. Which is good, man. It's great. People root for good teams. People root for good teams, not good, smart fiscal moves and sustained revenue generation. Believe me, as you look back, you're not going to look back at that time that, yeah, man, my team, it was so great. Remember that time we had that great revenue growth? Remember that time we were so responsible? Remember that time where we averaged this cost per win? No. Think about your favorite memories as a fan. What are the images you see? The big wins, the painful losses, right? Moments when your favorite team won it all or when it got this close. Not when they passed on an elite free agent to sign a middle-of-the-road player so they can maximize their own earning potential. Nobody's talking about that. The Yankees are trying to win. And we shouldn't be at the point where you have to hype that, but apparently we are. Sure. Cole is a SoCal native. I am a SoCal native. It would have been great to see him pitch for either of the SoCal teams. But again, I don't root. I don't root for anything other than something to talk about. And Cole and the Yankees just gave me that. So I'm all good. I like it. I like it. I like what it represents. Then you got Chris Mack and Louisville. Chris Mack has turned Louisville basketball around in a hurry. They were not supposed to be this good this fast, but they are this good, and it was that fast. They're the number one team in the country, and they can beat you in multiple ways. Then they ran into a team from Lubbock last night in Madison Square Garden. Texas Tech, 70. Louisville, 57. Now, if you want to talk about a team that is not supposed to be this good and a team that's not supposed to be where they are, they're not supposed to be this good where they are. Nobody fits that better than Tech. Forget being this good, this quick. Texas Tech is not supposed to be this good ever. Period.
Period.
All right? Never mind this good, this fast. They're not supposed to be this good, period. Texas Tech was not supposed to win the Big 12 last year. Texas Tech was not supposed to go to the Final Four last year. And they sure as hell were not supposed to lose four of their top five scorers off last year's team and then come right back this year and beat the number one team in the country in Madison Square Garden. Yet that's exactly what they just did. That's exactly what they just did because that's exactly what Chris Beard does. Whatever you expect him to do, he will do it better, much better. You think that guy can't get to the Final Four at Texas Tech? He will. You think that he won't go into Madison Square Garden and turn in a showing so good that security had to prevent a court storming? He will. You think that he won't dance after a W like that? He will do that too. Incredible. If you're watching the video on CBS Sports Network, that is amazing. Tech turned that locker room into a mosh pit. And they turned that Louisville game into a street fight. A street fight for street dogs. The permanent residents of the Garden, the New York Knicks, could do a hell of a lot worse than studying that game film and finding some of that Texas Tech magic. Because I can't remember the last time I saw a Knicks team battle and scrap and grind and hustle the way the Red Raiders did. And don't get it twisted. This is not about another number one team going down. And don't start getting all worked up about, oh man, what a topsy-turvy season this is. Up is down. Down is up. What that was, I mean, it might be those things, but what last night was about was not about Louisville losing. It was about Texas Tech winning. It was about Texas Tech announcing they're back. Them announcing they're not going anywhere. Them announcing they have not lost their chip. I'll get back to that in 1 second, but they are still Texas Tech. They are still 4-1. They are still looking to wreck you, even if they hadn't played their best defense, or even if they had not played their best basketball overall before last night. Let's be honest. Tech had really not looked like Tech last night, until last night, especially on their defense. They were banged up. They were missing some pieces. But then it all came together. They showed up last night the way you expect Tech to show up. And nobody was bigger than Avery Benson, the shaggy-haired former walk-on coming off the bench for 10 points and a pair of huge blocks in the first half. If you didn't know about him before, now you do. Because, as Beard himself said, quote, Avery is the backbone of our culture. He's in his third year at Texas Tech. He has an Elite Eight ring, a Final Four ring, a Big 12 championship ring. That's not happenstance. He's a big part of that. He's a tough guy who knows his role, plays his role. He's unselfish and tough. But let the story read, he's a good player. He earned the right to play in games like this, end quote. And he didn't just play in a game like that. He changed a game like that. He came into last night with three career blocks. He ended the first half with two more. Chris Clark said after that game, quote, Avery's a big-time player. He's a leader. I didn't really know too much about him before I got here, but when I did, they told me Avery was the toughest player. I have been expecting that since day one, end quote. So, if you're the toughest player on the toughest team, that's saying something. And that toughness showed up, and so did that defense. They held Louisville without a bucket for nearly 10 minutes in the first half. They forced 13 turnovers in the second half. And this is what it sounded like when it was over.
Inbounds, Davide Moretti, and that is it. Number one has been knocked off its perch. Winner, winner, Cardinal dinner. Texas Tech has defeated number one Louisville and defeated a first-ranked team for the first time ever tonight, 70-57.
Learfield IMG Radio, winner, winner, Cardinal dinner.
Winner, winner, Cardinal dinner.
I see what you did there. Never lose your chip. This is the Chris Beard mentality. He's got a lot of famous sayings. That's one of my favorite ones. Never lose your chip. And no matter the success that they had last year, that chip is still firmly planted on their shoulders. They are not pet store dogs. They're still street dogs. They aren't blue bloods. They don't want to be either. They want to be themselves. And last night against the best team in the country, they were themselves. And they dominated. I know that I do not have to tell you this, but never lose your chip, coach. Never lose your chip.
The Red Raiders have thoroughly rattled the cage of these birds.
I took part in the Men of March series that CBS has. And I went to Lubbock and I sat down with Chris Beard. We spent some time together. We had a sit-down interview. He interviewed me as part of his fireside chat. We broke bread. We hung out. I met his staff. Got a tour of the facilities. Great time. That's where that picture is from that I put up on Twitter. What a great win for them last night. Great, great win for the program. Had to acknowledge that. Texas Tech not losing their chip. And they go into Madison Square Garden and they beat top-ranked Louisville. Gerrit Cole gets his money. Yankees get their guy. Something else I want to hit. And next hour is a busy hour. Amanda Nunes has never been on this show. She is fierce. She's unbelievable. She is the UFC Women's Bantamweight Champion. Remember Dana White, and Dana White and I have talked about this before. Dana White at one point said, I will never, ever, ever let women fight in the UFC. Good thing he does. Good thing he did. Ronda Rousey got it started. And when people like Amanda Nunes and others saw the kind of success that Ronda Rousey was having, it just brought new people to the game. Athletes, combat fighters, people who saw Ronda Rousey and thought, man, it's amazing. Look how big she is. She's the biggest thing in the game, male or female. But she's limited. I could do better. I am better. I have more to bring to it. And hence you have somebody like Amanda Nunes. She's incredible. We'll have her on for the first time next hour. Jaguars kicker Josh Lambeau is coming up next hour. And I do want to talk about Le'Veon Bell and the aftermath. When the New York media got to Le'Veon and said, hey, man, like, what about that? What about you being out bowling the night before you could not play in a game? You missed practice. You missed a walkthrough. You weren't clear to play in the game. Yet you were out on a Saturday night before that game, bowling, not far from the facility. What do you have to say for yourself? And to paraphrase, he answers along the lines of, I'm glad you asked the question. What do I have to say for myself? I rolled a 251. Did you see that? What do I have to say for myself? What do I have to show for myself? My high game. That's what I have to show for myself.
Yo.
Adam Hawk, really quick. Throw your headphones on. So earlier in the program, somebody mentioned something about the Rome family Christmas cards, and the response was what?
Yeah, Liz in Falls City was wondering if we were going to do them again this year, because last year we had clones submit their Christmas cards and then we put them on television. And I just talked to Sharon, our TV producer in New York, and he said, yeah, let's do it again. So if anyone would like to have them or their family.
Let me
or
jump in. Adam, why don't you solicit right now? Solicit, radio term, solicit the Christmas cards from the clones.
If anyone would like to have them or their family or them and their cat or whatever, which would be cool, on our television show starting next week, you can email your Christmas cards digitally.
Everybody knows about the risks of driving drunk. You could get into a crash. People could get hurt or killed. Let's take a moment, though, and look at some surprising statistics. Nearly 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the past three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. Many people are unaware that driving while high can be just as dangerous. In 2015, 42% of drivers killed in crashes tested positive for drugs. Not so harmless after all, is it? And get this, from 07 to 2015, marijuana use among drivers killed in crashes doubled. The truth is, driving while high is deadly. Stop kidding yourself. If you're impaired from alcohol or drugs, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Drive sober or get pulled over. Josh Lambeau is my guest. Josh, good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How you doing? Thanks for having me on again.
Good. Good to have you back. All right, so the team was eliminated from contention with Sunday's loss to the Chargers. Josh, what I appreciated about our conversation earlier in the season is how real you were. So what's it feel like when you know that you're not going to the postseason, but you got to grind, you got to keep going?
Yeah, you know, it's really difficult. I mean, guys need to kind of, you know, and I'm not calling out anybody in particular. I just think the proper mentality to go going about having a 4-9, you know, season so far is, you know, at the end of the day, we are men and we signed our names to a contract and we need to go out and do our jobs and we need to work hard and we need to prepare as best we can because, you know, the next game's not guaranteed, the next season's not guaranteed. And, you know, so if you start putting loafs on film now, you know, that film stays with you. So if you're going to prove to the other 31 teams that you're a guy that once it gets tough, you're going to quit, well, then you're probably going to be out of the league.
Josh Lambeau joining us. Josh, I think I know the answer to this, but you're big on the mental side of things, being a mindful athlete. Does anything change for you as an athlete and a competitor when you know that you're not going to the playoffs?
You know, for a guy like me, no, just because I'd hope it wouldn't change for anybody. But, you know, for me personally, obviously that's all I can speak on. You know, my job, my opponent is always the same, whether you know, whether we win the game or not is important, or whether it has any, you know, meaning to it. You know, I always have a snap and hold and a kick, and I have to hit a ball through a yellow U in the sky. And, you know, so regardless of, you know, my opponent is the weather and, you know, just dealing with distance and things like that. And so it never really changes the approach for me. You know, I'm not going to, oh, well, you know, because the same thing happens to me. You know, that field goal percentage will go towards my career. You know, when I'm hopefully I get to leave this league on my own terms, I want to be remembered as, you know, a top 10, top 5 guy. And so if I go out there and, this kick doesn't really matter, who cares, you know, that is on my record forever, and I don't want that personally.
We're talking to Josh Lambeau. So if we were to go back a little bit, earlier this season we talked about your journey from pro soccer to college football and then to the NFL. After soccer ended, the plan was to go to college, see about kicking. So when you were doing that, were you thinking one day I'm going to be a Pro Bowl candidate in the NFL, or was the goal, let's just get a college degree?
Yeah, the goal is definitely get a college degree. I'd gotten an associate's degree while I was still playing soccer. Didn't really care about the grades there because, you know, I was going to play soccer for 15 years and then retire. And, you know, after four seasons, that dream was over. So, you know, I was definitely a student athlete. I definitely tried to be a student first. I never thought that football would work out. And thankfully, I got a break and, you know, I was fortunate enough to make the most of that opportunity.
Talking to Josh Lambeau, you know, you mentioned that yellow U in the sky. You've made the point that when you make the perfect connection with the ball, you can hear a thud. When it's not perfect, it's a slap. What does the thud feel like, and what's the slap feel like?
You know, that thud is going to be a little bit higher up. You know, just technically closer to your ankle, top of your foot. That slap is going to kind of be a little bit lower on the ball, probably closer to your toes. And that's just physics about amount of force going through the ball. And, you know, usually there's like, oh, God, it was when we were away to Tennessee, I had maybe a 49 or 50-yard kick, something like that. I wasn't ridiculously confident in it, to be honest with you. And I hit it, and it sounded good. I had that thud, but I felt like I pulled it a little bit. And I didn't even look at the ball because I thought I shanked it. I had to look at my holder, at Logan Cook, and say, did I make it? And he starts celebrating. He's like, yeah, you piped it. I was like, oh, my goodness, thank God. Because sometimes, you know, you might feel like you hit a ball super well and it might not do what you want. And sometimes you might feel like you hit a ball poorly, but it goes right down the middle. So, you know, you like to rely on those things, but at the end of the day, the final result's all that matters.
Josh Lambeau joining us. Listen, if you're up for it, I want to ask you about Sean Karpf. He's somebody you became close to during your time in Jacksonville. For those who don't know about him, who is he, and what does he mean to you?
Sean Karpf, he was in the Army. He was on a tour in Afghanistan, and he's from Jacksonville originally, joined the Army, and stepped on an IED while on patrol in Afghanistan, and ended up having to get his from his left knee down. I think about his left knee down, amputated. And so he's been through kind of hell and back with rehab and everything. And before I got here, thankfully, the Jaguars brought him in as an intern. And he's done so much for the city, for the organization. They ended up giving him a full time job. And I can't think of anybody who deserves it more. And he is kind of like my sanctuary away from football. Being in this building as much as everybody is, any building in the NFL, you can kind of grow weary. You can have some hard days. And Sean, he knows how to pick me up. He knows what's important. I mean, he got his a quarter of his body blown off. For crying out loud. And if I'm complaining about hitting too many balls or something on a Thursday, he puts things in perspective for me, and he makes me a better man. I'm certainly thankful to have him in my life.
I mean, Josh, if anybody would have a reason to have bad days, it's him. Does a guy like that have bad days?
Not that I've seen, and if he does, thankfully, I can kind of help pick him up, and we work really well together. He's more than just a coworker to me. Truthfully, there aren't very many people that when football is done, I'm still going to keep in contact with, and he's one of those guys that I'm going to be friends with forever.
That's funny, Josh, in a way, because guys always say the thing they miss most when the game is done is the guys and the camaraderie and the games,
right?
And you just said the opposite. Why is that?
This is just my own take. I think a lot of guys kind of have this thought process of that's what football is, that's what sport is. The football is family, and to a certain extent, I do think that's the case. But, when people talk about that, I've heard it said this way: if you want to stay friends with your teammates, go win a championship, because then you're going to be back every other year for some sort of reunion, And from what I've experienced from other pro sports being in the MLS, a lot of those guys that I thought were my best buds, I don't even have their contact information anymore. And, people grow apart and get on different teams, and, life happens.
Josh Lambeau joining us, and it is a business. Now, you are a candidate for the Pro Bowl. Voting is taking place through tomorrow via NFL.com/Pro Bowl. Vote. It's also on Twitter using the hashtag Pro Bowl Vote. It includes your Twitter handle. How much would it mean to you to get voted into the Pro Bowl?
You know what? I think it's kind of hard to quantify that. Just because, again, this was, football for me was a bonus. Like we were just talking about, I just really wanted to get a good college education. I was actually getting interviewed by E&J Gallo Winery coming out of college, and they wanted me to go do a final interview to get this particular job. And I said, well, thank you for the invite out to California to your headquarters, but I'm going to try and make this whole NFL thing work. And, thankfully, I haven't had to call them back yet. So,
so you were going to sell wine.
That was in the realm of possibility. That's for sure. Yeah, I have two agricultural degrees. I like to think I have a decent amount of charisma and personality. So hopefully I could, my hopes I could sell wine to a nun, but who knows?
Listen, I can see that. You take care of this Pro Bowl thing, and then that might open that door back up. I wonder what kind of territory, would you be living in California? I wonder what kind of territory they were going to give you.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I can take care of them all. I've lived on the West Coast. I grew up in the Midwest. I lived in the South for a long time. I'm wherever you need me, I'm your guy.
All right, so you're running out of time. So you are a candidate. You have until tomorrow to vote. You are having a great year statistically. One last thought. When you were on earlier this season, we talked about your love of animals and how passionate you and your wife Megan are for animal welfare. On top of that, you took part in an event yesterday to support the North Florida School of Special Education.
Right.
What was that like? What did that cause mean to you?
Yeah, so the North Florida School of Special Education means a lot to me. I've gotten to know a lot of those kids, know a lot of the staff members. My oldest brother, Nathan, he has Tourette syndrome, and he never had any sort of help or assistance when he was going through his schooling, and it negatively affected him a lot. And, it still does. He's in his 30s now, and, I think that, the school could have done things a lot differently and a lot better for him, for his benefit. So the fact that NFSSE even exists and they're doing all the good in the community that they are, you know, it's awesome to get to go and see those kids and you know, bring smiles to their faces. And more often than not, they're, you know, I'm the one leaving with a full heart. So that's a really special place, and I'm excited to work with that cause and that school.
Excellent. He is a Pro Bowl candidate. The voting goes through tomorrow, 26 of 27 on the season. Perfect from 50 yards plus this season. Josh Lambeau, my guest. Josh, great to have you back on. Thanks so much, and good luck with that.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Jim.
Amanda Nunes is my guest. Amanda, it's nice to have you on. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Good, good, Amanda. So we're a couple of days out from the fight. I'm curious, how was your camp, and how is Fight White Week going for you?
Honestly, the camp was amazing. You know, same exact, like, was the, my last one. And the fight week is great, you know. We have a lot of things to do, of course, a lot of busy things. But we have time to work out, break a sweat. And everything's fine, you know, ready to go.
Amanda Nunes joining us. You know, Amanda, you and I have not spoken, so let me ask you, when you were growing up in Brazil, you played soccer, and then your sister introduced you to jiu-jitsu. What did you like about jiu-jitsu?
First of all, it's a single sport, you know. You with yourself. And the problem for me play soccer was I depend on other people, you know. And that was a hard thing for me. And when I start training jiu-jitsu, I find the thing that I look for. And I never stop after that.
Amanda Nunes is my guest. Now, there's a story also about how you watched UFC 157 on pay-per-view, and that was the first women's fight in UFC history. Ronda Rousey won by armbar. What do you remember about that fight, and what kind of thoughts did you have that night?
Which fight? Which one?
When Ronda Rousey won by armbar in UFC 157, the first women's fight in UFC history. You watched that fight, right?
I guess who? I don't remember.
I thought the story was that you saw that fight, and then the first thing you thought was, I'm going to kick her ass.
No, actually, it was against Camush, Lisa Camush.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't even watch that fight, the whole thing, honest. And I was, at the same day, have a fight. All our friends from the gym was fighting the same day, and me and Nina was in the show. And when we finished in the show to watch the our friends, we run to see if we'd be able to watch that fight. We run it late, and then we saw just Ronda Rousey got her hands raised. But we watched the clips of her when we got in the bar, and I saw was the arm bar in. That was a huge moment for women's MMA.
That's what I'm getting at. So you and Nina saw that, and you saw the clips. Were you thinking at that point, I mean, did you start to formulate thoughts, I know that I can beat her. I'm going to be the world champion one day.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that was always the goal, be the best, you know. When I started soccer, I want to be the best at soccer. Anything that I do in my life, I want to be the best, you know. I want to do my best. And when I saw that happen, I knew right away, I would be the one. I'm gonna get the belt soon. And at the time, I was the only Brazilian was in the top 10. I know UFC is gonna sign me. I know right away, just a matter of time. And I got the call, I got the contract, but I expect already. And when I saw the fight, me and Nina was talking about it. You know, like soon we're gonna get the belt for her. But Holly take for us, Misha take from Holly, and after that was my time, and now here I am.
Here you are. Amanda Nunes is my guest. Here you are, not only a champ, but a double champ. Not only the best in the game, but arguably the best to ever do it. And at the same time, Amanda, while you're the greatest fighter of all time, I think most would argue, you're still posting videos on Twitter of you and Nina talking about washing dishes, who should unload the dishwasher, and things like that. You've said that without Nina, I don't know if any of this happens. How much does she mean to you and everything in your life?
You know, like when you're born to do something, you do, like, with or without the person. But when Nina got in my life, it's like everything flowed very well, you know. We're very happy. We like the same things. She fight. She understand me, you know. And we work very well. We have so much fun together. And a lot of people ask us, like, those videos, how happened? Say, like, honestly, like, sometimes I didn't even want to do just to happen. Maybe, like, sometimes when I play with my phone and then I see something funny, I want to share with everybody and I post that. But, yeah, Nina is was a huge thing happening in my life. You know, we help each other. We got each other back, and we grow together.
That's great. That's great. That's fun. Now you're going to fight Jermaine on Saturday. You did beat her back in 2013. When they came to you with this fight, why did you say yes?
You know, like, because she just beat the contender, Aspen Ladd. She deserved, you know. She was a former champion at 145. The only problem is she didn't defend her belt, but at least she got the belt, and she make her way back. And now when they call me, I say, like, I take it. They don't offer me anything else. They just offer me her, and I take it.
Amanda Nunes, my guest, for a couple of more moments. Amanda, before I let you go, I want to ask you about something your coach, Mike Brown, said. Mike Brown talks about when some fighters win, they can stop improving because they just don't want to do the work. They feel like they've got it. What I'm doing is working, yet that's not what you're doing, that you continue to stay motivated and you're looking to get better and add new tools. How much better are you right now than you were even a few years ago?
Yeah, definitely. I want to keep growing. Make me excited. See myself do something new every time in the fight. And having that belt at home, those belts at home, driving me really forward and keeping me motivated to keep evolving. Every time that I step in the gym, I want to learn something. I want to really, like, put myself in the top every time. And when me, Mike Brown training, I always learn something new for him. This is the good thing about all my coaches. They evolve with me. They are smart and making me, like, better. If my coaches evolve with me, we're going to be great forever. And, yeah, I feel like everything that I do, I put it work on. I put it my blood, I put it my sweat on, you know. And I want to do the best. I want to keep growing. I feel like everything that I want, I do happy, you know. I'm happy in my life. If I'm happy, my fighter life is happy as well. I think that's why I keep evolving, I keep stay here where I am right now.
Man, one last thought, and I'm really so impressed by that, but how do you keep the main thing? You know, like, for instance, when you have success, and then all of a sudden you have all these great things that come because of the hard work you've done, it's easy to get caught up in material things, caught up in the wrong things, but you're still a fighter and a champion at heart. How do you keep the main thing, and not get caught up in all those other shiny things, if you know what I mean?
You know, I learn it with life, you know. In my whole career, I have ups and downs. And my last down moment really helped me to put my foot on the ground, you know, and be ready for this moment that I'm here right now. And I feel like I learn it with the people, you know. When I look at people doing something wrong, I say, I look at myself and, like, I never gonna do that, you know. I learn it with people. The best school is the life, you know, and I learn it with it. And I feel like that is the big things. I have a good base, you know. My family raised me. My mom raised me very well. I always want to be the best, but I waited for my time. I never stepped in nobody else, like, toes. I never did anything bad for nobody. I know the life would have given me back, you know. I'm a good person. If you are, the life is going to give you good things back.
And lastly, Amanda, you have a good dog, too. You have a pit bull named Romeo. The videos that you post are great. What is Romeo like?
Oh, he's great. He's my best friend, you know. We have such a good time at home. I always tell Nina, like, when you know at home, like, look like I have somebody into. Because we, like, do a lot of things. We play outside. We go to the dog park. We really have a good time. And, you know, dogs are always good. They keep you company. They kind of know what you feel at the time. If you're sad, they're there. If you're mad, they didn't even come next to you, then, like, I feel like the dogs really give you like a good friendship, and I always like to have my dogs around.
Good night now!